So we're going to do two skits tonight, and then we also have a surprise, which you'll find out about afterwards. So actually, there should be lots of surprises all throughout. We're starting out with something a little different. In honor of Halloween, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, we're going to start out with a ghost story. So prepare to feel the little prickles of fear and dread trickle down your spine as we read to you about The Open Window. In this skit, Araceli Avena will read the part of Vera, and I, Debbie Stein, will read the part of Frampton Nuttall. Pam Gilmore, a veteran of many Braille is Beautiful events, will read the part of Aunt Eleanor. And Ken Staley will be heard as Uncle William. And Ken Shad will grace us with a performance as Nephew Ronnie. So, The Open Window, based on a short story by Saki, the pseudonym for an English writer named H.H. Monroe. The Open Window.
My aunt will be down presently, Mr. Nuttall. In the meantime, you'll have to try and put up with me.
Oh, I'm sure it will be my pleasure. My doctor says company is good for me. Good company in a pleasant country retreat. That's his prescription for my nerves.
Did your doctor tell you that we have a pleasant country retreat here at Aunt Eleanor's Inn?
Well, no. My sister suggested it. Mrs. Sappleton is your Aunt Eleanor, isn't she?
Yes. It's her inn. But she couldn't run it without me.
Sounds like a lot of responsibility for someone your age. Just how old are you?
I'm 14. People say I'm precocious. What do they mean, do you think?
I guess they mean you're advanced for your years.
Aunt Eleanor says I have a large imagination. Have you met many of the people around here?
Hardly a soul. My sister stayed here about 4 years ago, and she gave me letters of introduction to some of the people here.
Then you don't know anything about my aunt, do you?
Only her name and address, said really.
Her great tragedy happened just 3 years ago. That would be since your sister's visit.
Her tragedy? It's so peaceful here. What sort of tragedy could possibly happen?
You may wonder why we keep that window wide open on an October afternoon.
Well, it's quite warm for this time of year. Has that window got anything to do with the tragedy?
Out through that window, 3 years ago, to a day, her husband and her brother went off for their day's shooting. They never came back. And crossing the moor into their favorite snipe shooting ground, they were engulfed in a treacherous piece of fog. It had been a dreadful wet summer, you know, and places that were safe in other years gave way suddenly without warning. Their bodies were never recovered. That was the most dreadful part of it. Poor Aunt Eleanor always thinks they'll come back someday with the little brown spaniel that was lost with them and walk in at that window just as they used to. That's why she keeps the window open every evening till it's dark.
Oh, dear. That's so sad.
Poor Aunt Eleanor. She's told me over and over how they went out. Her husband with his white waterproof coat over his arm, and Ronnie, her youngest brother, singing The Minstrel Boy, as he always did to tease her because she said it got on her nerves. You know, sometimes on quiet evenings like this, I had a creepy feeling that they'll all walk in through that window.
Oh, I'm sorry to keep you waiting. Mr. Nuttall, you must be tired after your long trip.
I'm fine, thank you.
I hope Vera's been amusing you.
She's been very interesting.
I hope you don't mind the open window. My husband and brother will be home directly from shooting, and they always come in this way. They've been out for snipe in the marshes today, so they'll make an awful mess on my poor carpets.
All that mud.
The snipe have been very scarce this year. I don't know why, but it should be a good season for duck. I love a nice, fresh duck, don't you?
Ducks, I suppose so. Your weather here is lovely. It's so damp up in London.
What's keeping them? They ought to have been home half an hour ago.
The doctors are ordering me complete rest. They say I should avoid excitement and strenuous exercise, but they don't seem to agree about diet.
Oh, really? That's too bad. Oh, finally, here they are, just in time for tea, and muddy up to their eyes.
Oh, Mr. Nuttall, look through the window.
What? Help! Help! Oh, my God!
Yes.
Uncle William.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay, here we are, my dear. We've money, but most of it's dry. Who was that fellow who bolted as we came up?
A very peculiar man, a Mr. Nuttall. All he could talk about was his illnesses.
The way he dashed when we arrived, you'd think he'd seen a ghost.
I think it was the spaniel. He told me he had a horror of dogs. He was once hunted into a cemetery somewhere on the banks of the Ganges by a pack of pariah dogs, and had to spend the night in a newly dug grave with the creature snarling and grinning and foaming just above him. Enough to make anyone lose their nerve, wouldn't you say?
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Our next play is based on a short story by O. Henry, who's famous for his unexpected endings. And it's called The Ransom of Red Chief. Some people may be familiar with the story. We have the narrator, the part of the narrator, which is also actually the part of Sam, but it's Sam as narrator telling the story, and that will be read by Ryan Strunk, our NABS representative. And Sam, in his dialogue format, will be read by our national rep, Mark Riccobono. The part of Bill will be played by Anthony Thomas. The part of the villager will be read by Charlene Elder, and Bill Reif will read the part of Old Man Dorset, and Red Chief will be read by Lily Diego, one of our scholarship winners. So I bring you The Ransom of Red Chief.
Well, it looked like a good thing, but wait till I tell you. We were down south in Alabama, Bill Driscoll and myself, when this kidnapping idea struck us. It was during a moment of mental lapse, but we didn't find that out till later. Now, there was a town down there, as flat as a pancake, and they called it Summit, of course. Now, Bill and me had capital of about $600, and we needed $2,000 more to pull off a town lot scheme in western Illinois. We talked it over on the front steps of the Summit Hotel.
How about we hit a bank?
I've got a better idea. These folks down here are very devoted to their children. I think what we need is a kidnapping.
I guess Summit couldn't get after us with anything stronger than constables and maybe some sleepy bloodhounds and a piece in the weekly paper. It looks pretty good.
We selected for our victim the only child of a prominent citizen named Ebenezer Dorset. Father was respectable and rich. a stern, upright collection plate passer and forecloser. The kid was a boy of 10 with freckles and carrot-red hair. Bill and me figured that Ebenezer would melt down for a ransom of $2,000. About 2 miles from Summit was a little mountain covered with dense cedar brake. And on the rear elevation of this mountain was a cave where we stored provisions. One evening after sundown, we drove in a buggy past old Dorset's house. The kid was in the street throwing rocks at a kitten.
Hey, little boy, would you like to have a bag of candy and a nice ride?
And the boy catches Bill neatly in the eye with a piece of brick.
That will cost the old man an extra $500.
That boy put up a fight like a cinnamon bear, but at last we got him down in the bottom of the buggy and drove away. We took him up to the cave, and I hitched the horse in the cedar brake. After dark, I drove the buggy into the village of Polar Cove, 3 miles away where we had hired it, and walked back to the mountain. I found Bill pasting mud on a lot of scratches and bruises, and there was a fire burning behind the big rock at the entrance of the cave, and the boy was watching a pot of boiling coffee. He wore 2 buzzard tail feathers in his red hair. He points a stick at me when I come up.
Cursed palace, do you dare enter the camp of Red Chief, the terror of the plains?
He's all right now. We're playing Indian. I'm old Hank, the trapper, Red Chief's captive. I'm about to be scalped at daybreak. That kid can kick hard.
This is fun. I've never camped out in a cave before. You're Snake Eye, the spy. When my braves return from the warpath, we'll broil you at the stake of sunrise.
I fried up some bacon and biscuits for supper. Red Chief seemed very satisfied with the cooking.
I had a pet possum once. I'm gonna be 10 next birthday. I hate school. Rats ate up 16 of my aunt's speckled hens. Are there any real Indians in these woods?
Quiet down or they'll scalp us all.
I want some more gravy. Does the trees move? Does the trees moving make the wind blow?
What?
What makes your nose so red, Hank?
My nose? What's wrong with my nose?
My father has lots of money. Are the stars hot? I don't like girls. Why are oranges round? Have we got beds to sleep on in this cave? Amos Murray has six toes. How many does it take to make 12?
How many what? 12?
Red Chief, would you like to go home?
Aw, what for? I don't have any fun back home. You won't take me home again, will you, Snake Eye?
Not right away. We'll stay here in the cave a while.
All right. I've never had so much fun in my life.
Now, we went to bed about 11 o'clock. We spread down some blankets and quilts and put Red Chief between us. We weren't afraid he'd run away, though. He kept us awake for hours, jumping up and reaching for his rifle and screeching in our ears. At last, I fell into a troubled sleep and dreamed that I had been kidnapped and chained to a tree by a ferocious pirate with red hair.
Help me! Help!
What's the matter?
He's got me! Get that knife away from him! He's about to scalp me!
I told you, Hank. It's daybreak. Red Chief keeps his promises.
I got the knife away from the kid and made him lie down again, but from that moment, Bill never closed an eye in sleep as long as that boy was with us. I dozed off, but all of a sudden I remembered that Red Chief had said I was to be burned to the stake at the rising of the sun. Not that I was nervous or anything, but I sat up and lit my pipe and leaned against a rock.
What you getting up so soon for, Sam?
Me? I got a kind of pain in my shoulder. I thought sitting up would rest it.
You're a liar. You was to be burned at sunrise. And you was afraid he'd do it. And he would, too. If he could find a match. Ain't it awful, Sam? Do you think anybody will pay out money to get a kid like that back home?
Sure. A kid like that is just the kind that parents dote on. Now, you and the kid get up and cook breakfast while I go up on top of this mountain and reconnoiter.
Now, I went up on the peak of the little mountain and ran my eye over the vicinity. Over toward Summit, I expected to see the villagers armed with scythes and pitchforks beating the countryside for the dastardly kidnappers. But what I saw was a peaceful landscape and one man plowing with a mule. Nobody was dragging the creek. No runners dashed back and forth, bringing tidings and no news to the distracted parents. When I got back, I found Bill up against the side of the cave, breathing hard, and the boy threatening to smash him with a rock half as big as a coconut.
He put a red-hot broiled potato down my back, and then he mashed it with his foot. I boxed his ears for him.
Give me that rock, kid. That's enough out of you.
I'll fix you, Hank. No man ever yet struck the Red Chief, but what he got paid for, it. You better beware.
After breakfast, the kid takes a piece of leather with strings wrapped around it out of his pocket and goes outside the cave, unwinding it.
What's he up to now? You don't think he'll run away, do you, Sam?
No fear of that. He don't seem to be much of a homebody.
What did you see over by Summit?
It don't look like them folks has noticed. The wolves run off with their little lamb.
Heaven help the wolves.
Listen. We've got to fix up some plan about the ransom. Maybe they haven't realized yet that he's gone. His folks may think he's spending the night with Aunt Jane or one of the neighbors. Anyhow, he'll be missed today. Tonight, we have to get a message to his father and demand the $2,000. Duck, Bill! He's got a slingshot! Looks like he got you. You all right?
Maybe. Maybe not.
I got the slingshot away from him. It won't happen again.
Sam, do you know who my favorite biblical character is?
Take it easy. You'll come around in a minute.
King Herod was. You won't go away and leave me here alone, will you, Sam?
I'm gonna catch that kid and shake him till his freckles rattle. If you don't behave, I'm gonna take you straight home. Now, are you going to be good or not?
I was only having fun. I didn't mean to hurt old Hank. What did he hit me for? I'll behave, Snake Eye, if you want to send me home.
I mean it. No more trouble out of you.
Will you let me play scout today?
That's for you and Mr. Bill to decide. He's your playmate for today. I'm going away for a while on business. Now, you come in and make friends with him and say you're sorry to him, or else home you go.
Now, I made him and Bill shake hands. Then Red Chief went outside to hunt for cougars. I took Bill aside and told him I was going to Poplar Cove to find out what I could about the kidnapping. How the kidnapping was regarded in Summit. Also, I thought it best to send a letter to Old Man Dorset that day, demanding the ransom and dictating how it should be paid.
You know, Sam, I've stood by you in earthquakes, fire and flood, in poker games, police raids, train robberies, in the cyclones. I never lost my nerve yet till we kidnapped that kid. You won't leave me with him for long, will you, Sam?
I'll be back this afternoon. Just keep him amused and quiet. Now, let's write the letter.
Listen, Sam, do me a favor. Make the ransom $1,500. I ain't doubting old man Dorset's parental affections, but we're dealing with humans. We're dealing with humans here. It ain't human for anybody to give up $2,000 for that chunk of wildcat. I'm willing to take a chance at $1,500. You can charge the difference to me.
Oh, all right, if you really want it that way. Now, how does this sound? Ebenezer Dorset, Esquire. We have your boy concealed in a place far from Summit. It is useless for you or the most skillful detective to attempt to find him. Absolutely, the only terms on which you have, the only terms on which you can have him restored to you are these. We demand $1,500 in large bills for his return, the money to be left at midnight tonight at the same spot and in the same box as your reply as hereinafter described. If you agree to these terms, send your answer in writing by a solitary messenger tonight at 8:30. After crossing Owl Creek, on the road to Poplar Cove, there are three large trees about 100 yards apart, close to the fence of the wheat field on the right-hand side. At the bottom of the fence, the bottom of the fence post, opposite the third tree, will be found a small pasteboard box. The messenger will place the answer in this box and return immediately to Summit. If you attempt any treachery or fail to comply with our demand, as stated, you will never see your boy again. If you pay the money as demanded, he will be returned to you safe and well within 3 hours. These terms are final, and if you do not accede to them, no further communications will be attempted. Signed, Two Desperate Men.
All right, Sam. Do whatever you can.
As I headed out, the kid came up to me with this woebegone look on his face.
Aw, Snake Guy, you said I could play scout while you was gone.
Play it if you want to. Mr. Bill will play with you. What kind of game is it?
Well, I'm the scout, and I have to ride out to the stockade to warn the settlers that Indians are coming. I'm tired of playing Indian myself. I want to be the scout.
All right. It sounds harmless to me. I guess Mr. Bill will help you foil those pesky savages.
What am I supposed to do?
You're the horse. Get down on your hands and knees. How can I How can I ride to the stockade without a horse?
You better keep him interested till we get this scheme going. Loosen up!
How far is it to the stockade, kid?
90 miles, and you have to gallop to get us there on time. Giddy up!
For heaven's sake, hurry back, Sam! I wish we hadn't made the ransom more than 1,000. Quit kicking me, or I'll get up and give you something to holler about.
I walked over to Poplar Cove and sat around the store talking with the people that came in to trade.
I reckon you folks all heard the news.
News? What news is that?
Seems like folks in Summit is all upset.
Nothing ever happens in a place like Summit.
They're saying all Ebenezer Dorset's boys lost or stolen. Disappeared somehow anyway.
That's real sad. What a shame.
You're not from around these parts, is you?
Well, I'll just have some coffee and bacon. Gotta get going.
I hear tell there may be some festivities over Summit way. You wouldn't want to miss them.
Now, I stopped at the post office and mailed my letter. The postman said the mail carrier would come by in an hour to take the mail on to Summit. When I got back to the cave, Bill and the boy were not to be found. I explored around, but there was no sign of them. So I lighted my pipe and sat down on a mossy bank to wait. In about half an hour or so, I heard the bushes rustle, and Bill stumbled out into the clearing in front of the cave. Behind him was the kid, stepping real softly like a scout with a big grin on his face. Bill, when he stopped, took off his hat and wiped his face with a handkerchief. The kid stopped about 8 feet behind him.
Sam, I guess you think that I'm a traitor, but I couldn't help it. There's a time when all systems fail. The kid's gone. I sent him home. It's all off. I tried to be faithful to our plan, but there came a limit.
What's the trouble, Bill?
I was rode the whole 90 miles to the stockade. Then, when the settlers was rescued, I was given sand as oats. And then, after for a half an hour, I had to try to explain to him why there was nothing in the holes, how a road can run both ways, and what makes the grass green. A human can only stand so much. I took him by the neck of his shirt and dragged him up clear down the mountain. He kicked my legs black and blue, and I've got 2 or 3 bites on my thumb, too. But he's gone home.
How do you know?
I showed him the road to Summit and kicked him about 8 feet nearer there at one kick. I'm sorry. We lose the ransom, but it was either that or lose me to a madhouse.
Bill, there isn't any heart disease in your family, is there?
No, nothing chronic except accidents. Why?
Then you might turn around and have a look behind you.
No. No! Oh, Lord, please tell me it isn't true!
Calm down! It won't be much longer now. Look, we'll get the ransom by midnight, and then we'll be off.
I really took you by surprise, didn't I? Now, let's play war. You can be the Japanese.
Whatever you say, kid, whatever you say.
I had a real professional scheme for collecting the ransom. The tree under which the answer was to be left, and the money later on had big, bare fields on all sides. If a gang of constables should be watching for anyone to come for the note, they could see him a long way off, crossing the fields or in the road. But I was too smart for that. At 8:30, I was up in the tree, as well hidden as a tree toad. Now, exactly on time, a half-grown boy rides up the road on a bicycle, locates the pasteboard box at the front of the fence post, slips a folded piece of paper into it, and pedals away again back toward Summit. I waited an hour, then I slid down the tree, got the note, slipped along the fence till I struck the woods, and was back at the cave in 30 minutes. I opened the note, got near the lantern, and read it to Bill. It was written with a pen in a crabbed hand, and the sum of it and the substance of it was this.
2 desperate men. Gentlemen, I received your letter today by post in regard to the ransom you ask for the return of my son. I think you are a little high in your demands. And I hereby make you a counter proposition, which I am inclined to believe you will accept. You bring Johnny home and pay me $250 in cash, and I agree to take him off your hands. You had better come at night. And the neighbors believe he is lost, and I couldn't be responsible for what they might, for what they would do to anybody they saw bringing him back. Very respectfully, Ebenezer Dorset.
How dare he? What kind of loving parent?
Sam, what's $250? We can afford it. He's a thorough gentleman. He's a spendthrift for making us such a generous offer. You ain't gonna let the chance go, are you?
Tell you the truth, Bill, the kids somewhat got on my nerves, too.
Bless you, Sam, bless you. You're a real pal.
We'll take him home, pay the ransom, and make our getaway.
We took him home that night. We got him to go by telling him that his father had bought a silver-mounted rifle and a pair of moccasins for him, and we were going to hunt bears the next day. It was 12:00 when we knocked at the Ebenezer's front door. Just at that moment when I should have been slipping the $1,500 from the box under the tree, Bill was counting out $250 into Dorset's hand. When the kid found out we were going to leave him at home, he started up a howl and fastened himself tight as a leech to Bill's leg. Father peeled him away gradually, like a bandage.
How long can you hold him?
I'm not as strong as I used to be. I think I can promise you 10 minutes.
That's enough. In 10 minutes, I'll cross the central, southern, midwestern states and be headed for the Canadian border.
Now I tell you, as dark as it was, and as good a runner as I am, he was 1.5 miles out of Summit before I caught up with him.
Okay, we have one other small surprise, and I haven't heard this myself, but Lily Diego offered to read one of her poems, and so she will read a short poem before we break.
Excellent.
Lily, you ready?
I have a problem. I don't know how to use a corded.
How do you use what?
A corded.
Oh, yeah. To use the QWERTY keyboard?
Yeah.
Oh, who's got it?
Is that a Brillo?
Yeah.
Let me have a look. I'm going to find it real quick here.
Can you set it up for me?
Give me two shakes, yeah?
Yeah, okay.
It's a compact flash card. Open it on the compact flash card.
Yeah, you change it over, Ryan.
What's that?
Change it over.
Yeah, I'm just going to open up the file on here.
Just get her the file, and then it should be standard.
Nice job, sir.
This break brought to you by the Slayton Stylus. Versatile, portable. Fits in your pocket. Use Braille anywhere. Slate and Stylus.
I said it's on the compact flash card.
Yeah.
What's the name of the folder?
It's called the Stuff That's Me or something.
Is it in the folder?
No, it's in the folder. It's called Stuff That's Me or something. Like that.
And now for a commercial break.
No.
It's not missing over to the code.
Oh, we're from our sponsor.
It's in card stuff.
Yeah, it's in card stuff. Ooh, there's a whole bunch of them. I could go through it because you just press space, right?
No.
Yeah, is it the slider, the pin, stuff like that?
No, I don't know.
Go for it. Come on.
You had looked at your script.
Showed I should be asking for.
Wait, 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 your book's not in yet. We'll try to have it next year without fail. We are not your corner store. We cannot do any more. after all, you know, just 1% rebel. Wait, 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 your book's not in yet. We'll try to have it next year without fail.
Without fail.
We're not your corner store, we cannot do anymore. After all, you know, just 1% rebel. After all, you know, just 1%.
Learn more about Braille literacy. Go to braille.org.
How are we doing with the Braille, though?
Just about there.
Just about.
Sorry.
Do we need
another refrain?
No.
I thought maybe you were writing it out with a slit.
Is that the one?
What? Should I
put it? It has to be agreed.
No, you can
the Braille literacy rate would go up if technology worked better.
But that's not
enough.
Yeah,
that's my Braille note, your grandma.
Well, so tell me,
Patty,
because the one thing I can't seem to figure out on this one, Patty, is how you get it to display in grade 2. Now, I went through the options menu, and that didn't work.
Maybe we could have a phone a friend.
Technology.
Someone on the internet could call in.
Here, let me get it.
All right. Now,
the number is
in the middle of this cemetery by my house. There's this pecan tree that grows, and the pecan tree is right on a hill. So as there are these two boys that are picking pecans in this tree one day in the cemetery, and as they're picking the pecan, some of them start to roll down the hill and land against the chain link fence that's down there.
The boys are the pecans.
The nuts. So as these two boys sit down, they decide that they want to start dividing up these nuts between themselves. And so they start counting them out. One for you, one for me. One for you, one for me. And about this time, my friend Jake comes riding down the road on his bicycle. And he hears them counting. One for you, one for me, one for you. And he gets freaked out. You know, can't blame him when you hear voices in the cemetery. So Jake goes tearing down the street on his bicycle. And he comes across Old Man Dorset. And, I have one of those in my town, too. And Old Man, you know, he comes up to this guy and he says, Mister, you got to come quick. You got to come quick. God and the devil are sitting in the cemetery and they're counting off souls. And the old man says, boy, you are dumb as a post. And he says, no, really, you got to come look, please, mister, please. And so Jake and Old Man Dorset go back up the road and they get to this fence. And they hear these kids in the cemetery going, one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me. And the old man goes, by God, boy, you're right. This is terrible. I'm so frightened. I can barely speak. And then all of a sudden, the voices stop. And everybody gets real quiet. And they're leaning against the fence, shaking for their lives. And one of the boys goes, well, that's all of them. Now let's just get those nuts by the fence and we can go home.
Are we ready?
Whoever can find the file.
Okay.
We wonder why the employment rate is so low.
Maybe we'll take a
rain
check.
Blind.
Up in grade 1. We can't find it when we try and translate it. I got the translation, and I can't find it on the drive.
Okay.
Braille is beautiful.
Now, wait a minute. Review curious options, yes.
So long ago.
Oh, I said
oh, do yes, because it'll translate right up in that menu, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Try again.
That is true.
Yes. Okay, now escape and see the translate. Should have translated.
There's our minstrel sing.
No? Yes?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Yes. 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 We're ready. We translated.
All right. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Well worth waiting for, I bring you Lily Diego.
Thank you. Actually, I think Patty and her family heard this one. I didn't have much time to pick, but here goes.
The title?
Oh, there's no title. It's untitled. Okay, now I have to kind of give a little background. Basically, this poem was written when, for some like Girl Scouts volunteering thing that I did. It was teaching them about disability awareness, and basically, it talks about how my struggle as a child with the English language, so, and my disability. No, it's okay. It's fine. Okay. Should I feel sorry because I insulted people who insulted me? Should I feel sorry for those who hurt me, brought me down, and sort of bossed me around and made me cry all the time? I don't know why, but I do feel sorry because I'm embarrassed. I can't face the teachers who knew me back then. Back then when my lips were sealed shut, when I threw tantrums, when I would fight with words. I mean, look at me, skinny, short in height, and yet I seem so sure. One day I heard my classmates talking about me behind my back. I got mad and went up to them. Spit out in words in English and Spanish. My face was so red, and I'm not even sure of what I said or even if the kids understood. But I didn't care because they had finally picked my last nerve. Pigtails flying in my face, my body shaking with rage. I cursed and yelled at them, then walked away. Now I'm ashamed for exploding that day. Then there was another time when I went out of my usual way. I acted out bad that day, kind of insane. That day, when I couldn't say I wanted a white milk, teacher gave me chocolate. I couldn't read the label, so I took a sip. I was disgusted because it wasn't white, but chocolate. In my rage, I flung the milk carton. Apparently, I had good aim. The milk not only splattered on her face, but all over her clothes. She just sort of froze. I wondered today why I did that for. So I'll apologize this time and many more because I didn't know that at that time I made people's lives impossible. If truth be told, I'm glad those kids who called me names were finally put in their place. I'm still just kind of sorry though. But to the teacher who gave me chocolate instead of white, I hope she's doing fine. And my apologies go out to her the most. My sincerest hope is that she erased that scene out of her mind. If it makes her feel better, I stayed short. All that white milk I drank never helped me grow. It doesn't matter now if the milk's chocolate or white. I don't even like milk anymore.
Thank you. That was worth waiting for. Thank you, Lily.